order. And members, you have an agenda in your packet. And to let you know in advance, we are anticipating one more meeting. We're inviting Representative Hortman to come down and to put a framework around what we're discussing today. So you've seen the agenda, and I would encourage members, and I'll start with number one, and we'll work our way through, to these are simply statements. We can add to these, or you can subtract. But whatever we agree on, we will then have staff put into a format that we can recommend to the Rules Committee. So I'm going to start with number one, the forecast, November forecast versus February forecast. We have staff here that has testified before the committee, and they can certainly come down and remind members of what the difference would be between the November forecast versus the February forecast to use in budgets. So I will open it up for discussion, members.
Mr. Chair, I'll wait in. I have a couple of concerns. I sat on the Education Committee and the Environmental and Natural Resources Committees, and when we began our conversation with the November forecasts, our targets at education were $900 million. By February, I think the forecast had been reduced to $740, and eventually we approved, I think, $540 million in new spending. But it seems to me that $900 million at the beginning of the November forecast was so was overly optimistic, and it was based on what people have called aspirations. My concern was that when the decisions became more difficult, priorities weren't really in place. At least that was my perception. And that in the last few days of the session, decisions were made without reference to priorities. My suggestion would be that the November predictions might be a prediction, maybe, but not something that we begin to base our conversations on. That early conversation within the session be dedicated to establishing priorities. If we're lucky and look forward to prosperous times, what are the new issues that we can pursue? What areas can we strengthen? But without those priorities, it seems to me that initial conversations are sometimes not just a loss of time, but maybe even detrimental. Thank you.
For those who have just come into the room, members, we're going through number four on the agenda, the prospective budget process reforms, and we're having a discussion of number one, the November forecast versus the use of the February forecast. So that's where we're, and for folks who just came in, we anticipate at least one more meeting of the committee. We're inviting Representative Hortman to come down and put a framework around what we'll be recommending to the Rules Committee. So we're discussing number one. Representative Rumbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it certainly does seem that the first 2 months are somewhat wasted because we, for lack of numbers, and it shouldn't seem to be that way. I'm wondering if we can't ask agencies to think about, you know, a three-level budget, low, medium, and high. So that at least there's things to talk about, there are bills to talk about, and the numbers are blank. It gives, I think, our committees a lot longer time to really ponder what's going on in the agencies and more time to think about those numbers.
All right. Representative Rob.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is less related to the forecast, but I think it is relevant. One of the questions I had when we had our other meeting as a working group was how we can get the budget targets to the committees earlier. To me, we could still use the February forecast, but then if we could require the targets to get to the committees much earlier, that's where the inefficiency seems to stem in my mind. Committees sit there all session and have no idea what their target is, and if the governor's budget comes out, you know, in end of February, early March, I think we should be able to get targets to the committees very soon thereafter, so that we're not just hearing all this testimony and all these requests without any idea what our numbers are. And I think that that is what drives a lot of the chaos at the end of session, is that the targets come out so, you know, early May. And I think having the targets to the committees earlier would be much more helpful in creating an orderly process.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure that I have a preference on one or over the other, but I would say maybe it raises some questions. Just November versus February would be efficiency versus efficacy. I think, you know, if we had it in November, you know, we could maybe be more efficient with our time, potentially. But if the February forecast alters that number quite severely, then we're not very efficacious. We're not very successful in what we're doing. So I think there's that. I think we probably, as committee members and chairs or leads or whatever, we should determine how we use the time from when we start to when we get some solid numbers. And I'm not sure that we use the time in the best way possible. I think that for many of us, we come in and, you know, it's all about the target. It's all about what the money is going to be. In the, and so we kind of message everything toward that. We use that as an excuse, actually, to get to that target, when instead I think we could probably build a more solid foundation and have a better understanding about the budget that we have before us. For me, agriculture, or, you know, for others in different areas, I'm not sure that we probably take that time in the best way possible. So maybe I'm leaning more toward using the February forecast, but also using the time that we are given at the beginning of the session to be a little bit more solid in our understanding about the budget. And again, not necessarily using the target terminology and or target, financial target, as the excuse, but instead that comes out of a future time and we'd be better prepared for that.
Yeah, Representative Poppy, you raise a point that we did discuss both before session in December and then when we had the hearings after session, that there was a time where January and February were rather intense discussions of the budget, of the budget accounts of each committee, so that the members of the committee understood what the accounts were, and that the there were limits to what you could do inside many of these budget accounts, that the money was committed. The discussion that we had here was on K-12, and the K-12 is basically a base-funded budget, and that you have to be very careful about the budget when you're dealing with just the budget itself, regardless of whether or not there's a forecast of a plus or minus. So you raise a good point that in January and February, more time perhaps could be spent on analyzing the budgets and understanding the budgets before you even discuss what monies might or might not be available. Members were discussing number one under the fourth item on the agenda, which forecast would be preferable, the November forecast or the February forecast. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Should this committee decide on what is best and or a recommendation to the legislature and or the speaker, to what degree do you think that they will take our suggestion?
Representative McDonald, I started by saying we've invited Representative Hartman to come down at another meeting. And whatever this committee decides by discussion for the points that we have on the agenda, we would like Representative Hartman to put a framework around exactly what you've stated. What will she see possible that we can do in this legislative session and then in future legislative sessions? So I'm hopeful you'll be able to ask that question to the speaker.
Very good thing. To follow up, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
My opinion would be the November seems to be a little bit more, give us a little more time to be accurate. As accurate a legislature can be. But after the suggestion and after Representative Hartman is, Speaker Hartman is given the our recommendation, how is that then? What's the procedure? Is that voted on in the legislature? Is that management? How is that handled?
Well, the next step would be the full committee, Rules Committee.
Okay.
So from there, we'll have to see. But Rules Committee would be the next step.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Rumbeck.
So what was I thinking here?
Hold on.
Something like that. Oh, gosh. You'll have to come back to me. Sorry.
All right. Representative Robin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Regarding the specific question of the February versus the November forecast, my personal opinion as the new member, which I offer my respect to all the rest of you for, is I think the February forecast is more informative because it does account for Christmas sales and economic activity. That's at an important point in the year. So my understanding and having had discussions since our last meeting with other people is that the February forecast numbers are very instructive. And so that's why, you know, to my earlier point, the February forecast, if we continue that tradition, then having the targets earlier based on that number, I think, would be a good combination for efficiency in managing the process.
Okay. Representative Rumbeck.
Thanks. Now I remember. So committee chairs, and Representative Poppy sort of alluded to it, is that the how they structure the time is somewhat up to each committee chair. And that was how it was with when the Republicans were in the leadership, too. And I frankly don't understand why that wouldn't want to be more structured. I mean, there's certain business to be done, and I cannot figure out why it should be up to a chair to decide what to hear, what not to hear. It seems like there's business, there is data you should be looking at, there are questions that should be asked, and it should be a bit more standard when it comes to the running of a committee. And it would be great to see something like that in the rules. Here's what you do and when you do it as a committee chair.
Anyone else on number one, or should we now move to number two? Number two, timing of the budget resolution, and you should have in your packet the rules. So if you go to rule 4.03B, there was a rather long discussion on timing of the budget resolution and when that should be. So I'll open it up for discussion, and you can find your, it's the yellow. You're not used to the rules, it's the yellow packet in your committee folder. And it's on page 18, 4.03D. I think this goes to Representative Runbeck's point and Representative Poppy's point and Representative Robin's point about when we should have a budget resolution and how early that budget resolution should be. And if you remember the discussion, there was some discussion of setting this budget resolution as early as possible so that we would have an idea as to what would be plausible in the budget accounts of each committee.
So,
Representative Miller.
Mr. Chair, in listening to the conversation today, one of the things that does concern me a bit is once the budget numbers are out, it might be that some committee chairs may say, we've already hit our expenditure limit, we don't want to hear any more bills. And there may be a bill that would be presented later that might be more important than a bill that was heard earlier. I don't know for sure, depending on committee work. I would like to see the numbers for the budget to the committee chairs as quickly as possible, but I would also like to make sure that the committee chairs are open to hearing those bills for possible inclusion, and not closing their mind possibly to say all of their own personal priorities have been hit. And whether it's a Republican, a Democrat, or cannabis party, or independent person who chairs those committees, I just want to make sure that we don't limit the discussion of bills that individuals might want to bring before the committee and that more bills are heard as opposed to fewer based on budget numbers.
You raise an interesting point, and I think it's got a couple of different variables. The first variable is this: because you have a budget target early does not necessarily mean you close down the committee. But if you've done your work in advance on what exactly is your base budget, you also then know the limits to what any bills you have before the committee are plausible. And I'm going to repeat that almost, we used K-12 education as an example of a base budget, but almost all of the accounts in all of the fiscal committees have base budgets. If you go beyond what is available in the forecast, you are then cutting or making significant changes in those base budgets, which could have a ripple effect across the state. So I don't think you shut down the committee. I think you have a rather more interesting discussion of what you can do with the bills you have in committee and how viable they are given both your base budget and then whatever would be in the forecast, whether that's positive or negative. And I want to remind members, we've had sessions where there have been gigantic negative numbers also, which then impacted that base budget. So you raise a good point. I think it just makes the discussion much more intelligent about what bills are plausible and how you're going to handle your final budget. But you make an interesting point, and one that should revolve around all of the bills you have in the committee and whether or not even some of them, and you can hear them, but because of what's in the bill, you may not be able to pass them. Okay. Representative Runbeck. We're making a list, so hang on. Representative Runbeck, you're next.
I'm not sure I raised my hand.
Oh, you did?
Sorry.
All right, Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You're making a list, and I hope you check it twice. just a comment, not sure if it'll, hopefully it'll contribute to the dialogue, but certainly I don't expect any reform to come out of it. But something I've recognized over the 10 years being here, the little time that I've been here, is that it seems as though when we are in a deficit, we are a more responsible legislature. Now, that's just my own opinion, could be wrong. The experts in the room could refute that, certainly. But as I recall, when we were billions in the deficit, everybody tightened their belt. All the special interest groups were very responsible in coming to each legislator saying, please don't cut us, or don't hold us hostage. Or everybody was a lot responsible and a little bit more careful and deliberate of what we do here. When we're in a surplus, it's like helter-skelter. You throw up the confetti and we try to catch one piece or two and make sure everybody gets a piece of the pie. Everybody's included. Everybody wants more money. And it just, it's, I think that the majority of folks would find that maybe a little troublesome, that when there's plentiful of money, we're irresponsible. All of us, me too. I put in bills that can spend this and that and the other thing. It's all very important. But in a deficit, boy, we're all tighten up, very responsible, very serious, very careful to all the groups, education, transportation, healthcare. So it would be nice to know if we could have any reform that is that careful deliberation in a deficit is the same practice that we do in a surplus. I don't know, think if it could be done, but it's certainly something to think about. Mr. Chairman, what's your thoughts?
Representative McDonald, I would argue the other point. I think we were grossly irresponsible when we had the $5.8 billion deficit, and nobody really knew what was happening when we made the cuts. And when we made the cuts, there was no analysis of, I'll use higher ed for an example. We were cutting higher education $450 million, which was a record amount not only in the state but also in the country. We had no idea of the tuition increases. We had no idea of the debt that would be generated by those cuts. We simply took it as, well, that's what we have to do, without an understanding. And now we know we instituted record tuition and we have record debt. We are fourth and fifth in this country in the amount of debt each student carries and in the number of students that carry debt. So I think your point would be this. If we're going to make those types of cuts, we should understand the consequences of those types of cuts. And that should be one of the primary focuses. And I would argue the other point. If you're going to increase your budget, you should also understand exactly where it's going to go and how that is going to be impacted in the future. So the analysis of the budget, to me, is the primary concern of the legislature and how you play those budgets out over the course, not just of the legislative session, but of future legislative sessions. So I'd argue the opposite. I think we were grossly irresponsible during the budget cycles. We made cuts. We had no idea what we were doing.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess we'll have to agree to disagree, because I think we're more irresponsible when we have budget surpluses, because then it's everybody wants to spend. And when we have billions of dollars of deficit, there's a lot of tough choices have to be made. You're right, not all perfect. We're not a perfect people. We are flawed. But there were some very important and necessary cuts that were necessary to balance the budget.
Representative McDonald, I agree. I just don't think we understood what the cuts were and the consequences of the cuts.
That
and we're still living with those consequences. Representative Gruenhagen, you have arrived.
Finally. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just a guest here. I got another meeting actually at 10 o'clock. But I do think this is a very important meeting and on the issues that you're dealing with. Just as, you know, this is one thing that's always been playing in the back of my mind. Is that, you know, we really, when we set the budget and the expenditures, I think we need to tie it to some type of economic standard in terms of the growth of the budget. And what I mean by that, and I'm just throwing this out, brainstorming and food for thought. You know, I've got a chart in my office, I think I got a copy yet, that shows that the growth of government, I think, in the last 20 years has grown much faster than the growth of personal income in the state of Minnesota. So we're growing government at a faster rate than personal income. Now, you could use several other measures. You could use gross national product to the state of Minnesota, or, you know, the growth of that. Inflation might be a factor in there. But I personally believe that when government grows faster than personal income, or the growth of the private sector, regardless of your good intentions, we're doing more damage than good, okay? Because the weight of government is an expense on the private sector and for individuals. So I really believe to resolve some of these issues, if we tied ourselves to an economic factor, such as personal income or GNP in the state of Minnesota, it would limit us as a legislature what we can actually spend and do without doing more damage to the private sector. And, you know, listen, human passions and desires are unlimited. Just look at the last introduction of bills in this session. Go back a few. In other words, we all have unlimited desires to a certain degree. Now, the only representative that I've observed or legislator in the whole legislature for over 10 years that has put a limit on himself in the area of desires and passions is Chair Pawlowski. If you look at the bills he introduced, they're very crafted and limited in terms of the changes they make. The other thing, when he was chair of higher ed, and I had the privilege of serving on there, he did what I consider to be an excellent job of vetting some of the excesses in higher ed and student debt and tuition increases. So, you know, I really think we need to think this, that human nature, you know, our whole country is founded on the idea of putting some limits on human passions and desires, okay? And that's what the Constitution is about, and laws to a certain degree. But when it comes to our budget, we seem to throw that off and just, the sky is the limit. Now, some have suggested that we put a limit on the number of bills that a legislator can introduce. I kind of oppose that idea. If you want to introduce a bill, go ahead and do it. But I do think we need to put a limit on the budget, some type of outside economic principle or data that says you can't spend more than what the personal income is going up in the state. And we all need to recognize bipartisanly that if we do, we're doing more damage than good, because government is an expense on the private sector. It drives up the cost of goods and services for the least that can afford it. And we need some type of a governor on our desires and passions. So, you know, I just leave you with that. I got that 10 o'clock meeting coming up. But Hopefully nobody will refute a single word of what I just said.
Thank you, Representative.
God bless you.
Representative Poppy, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I could make this a much broader discussion, because I think one of the things that creates this situation, which is the bills versus budget kind of topic, is the fact that we're in a two-year election cycle. Because we are always, we either have new members or we have everybody up for election or re-election. And because of that, due to that, I think that we have an individual versus collective effort when it comes to the budget. And, you know, we do understand that we have partisan differences, that we have views that are going to lead us in a different direction based on either where we're elected from or the party that we happen to be members of, however that works. But I think, you know, that's one of the things I've seen is that we, you know, bills are important to people. Bills are that, this is, it's my bill. It's, you know, this is my stamp on who I am as a legislator or however you kind of approach that, rather than understanding that, you know, my role is to help the all of my fellow legislators and myself together come up with the budget that works for the people of Minnesota. And I think, you know, I'm not sure that we answer that today here, but I think for us to think about that, I think I'm intrigued by Representative Runbeck's thought about having a little bit of a standardized approach to what we do or how we do it. You know, maybe there's a sense of, you know, if we could agree that that's how we're going to do that, at least initiate something like that, that might be helpful for us to say, you know, this is our role here. And I think we have a number of new people that come in seemingly every 2 years. So, you know, it's kind of going to take some time to get us to change any approach that we've previously taken. But I do think that we have currently a bills versus budget kind of approach. And maybe, you know, how do we help us all think differently and have a more collective approach and perhaps a better outcome that is good for the people of Minnesota, not necessarily good for individual legislators, however.
Representative Poppy, when we had the two hearings in December before session started, we had Brenda Erickson from NCSL come in. And the issue came up of whose bills these are, and if members who attended that hearing remember, she reminded us these are not our bills. These are the people of Minnesota's bills. And when we take possession of a bill, that's where the trouble begins. We forget that these are for the people of Minnesota and not for our individual, I'm going to have to find a word here that would be polite, and not to enhance ourselves. So I think that's one of our problems. These are not our bills. They're the people of Minnesota's bills the minute they're introduced. And I do think your point is extremely well taken. We have become a bill factory. We deal with bills. And our constitutional responsibility, as we heard in this hearing, is to balance this budget and to produce a balanced budget by the end of session. That's our responsibility, not to pass bills. Granted, bills will be needed to do that job, but 2,922 bills is a bit much this session, another record. The only thing we can look at is the Senate, which is half our size, produced more. So we can blame them, I suppose. Wow. So Representative Sandell, you're next.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My concern is that when people talk about budget, immediately the dollar signs come to mind. How much money do we have to spend? Or how much money do we have to cut back? My question with a budget is, what is it we want to accomplish? What is our goal? And our goal doesn't necessarily mean spending more money when it's a surplus or an anticipated surplus. It doesn't mean necessarily cutting everybody's budget to a certain percentage when there's a deficit. I worked at the university for a while, and the college I worked at had some difficulties with its finances 1 year. The dean called us all together, talked a little bit about the work going on in the college, and then said, as you all know, we're facing a budget deficit. All of your budgets are presently going to be cut 20%. That was it. That was the approach to budgeting. And that was wrong. Yeah. what is it we want to accomplish? It doesn't mean that we in our committees have to stand firm on our appropriation of a certain amount of money or a certain bill. It means how is it we can work together to find a strategy that improves education, protects our environment, makes sure that our roads and transportation are good, makes sure that responsible businesses, jobs, and our economic growth is in place. What is it we want to accomplish? That's why I talked a little bit about priorities earlier today. Once we know what those goals are, we can find ways to do that within the limitations of our budget, as Representative Grunhagen talked about. So I hope that our committee process talks a lot about that. I've heard people say, you know, take a look at a budget because that's a moral document, not just a financial document, and I believe that's true. And as we talk about our aspirations, our goals for the people of Minnesota, as Representative Pulaski suggests, those are where the conversations, I think, should begin to direct our pencils and paper toward dollars and cents. Thank you.
Representative Pinto.
Oh, I have not.
Nope. All right. Representative Kaplan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a great conversation. I just want to say that. Thank you for bringing us together. To Representative Poppy, I would say we are an interesting body in that we are charged to work together as a collective, but we are also a competitive group in that our constituents want us to deliver for them. And so we do have to think about the needs of our community, right? So we have 134 separate election certificates, and our job is to be accountable to our constituents. So I will say that. The piece about the budget that all has concerned me from before the time I got here was that we always talk about the revenue, and that drives our expenditures. But we never go back and look at the tax expenditures, the discounts that have been given to different groups. And I don't know why that piece is never entered into the conversation. So if we are going to talk about revenue, we have to talk about also what revenue we're choosing not to collect. And so how do we bring that piece back into the conversation? Once a tax expenditure is passed, I don't see that there's ever a review process. And it may or may not be meeting the goals that it was originally intended for. And so what is the review process for that, and how do we bring that back into the budget conversation?
Representative Claiborne, I'm going to just remind the committee again that when we had a discussion, mm-hmm. There was also a discussion of when Governor Dayton, which would have been an even-numbered year, had what he called the un-session, to take mm-hmm. a look at exactly what you're saying, what we had done, and what we probably could either repeal or refine instead right. of doing everything over again in a mini-session. So you raise an excellent point, and that we should be more reflective on what we've done and whether it works. And right. if it doesn't work, then it should be repealed. So Representative Runbeck, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in this rule, 4.03, it's talking about 25 days, and that might be something we should focus on. I mean, is that too long a time? And what is the kind of work to be done? And if we have been, if the chairs have been doing their work for the preceding 2 months, couldn't that time frame be shortened? I don't know what's the optimal, but it might be worthy having a discussion about that, because it may help move everything forward a bit.
I think you've hit on what, because this is another month really of delay. Mm-hmm. So this would be if this could be dramatically shortened. And why couldn't it be shortened if we've already understood what the November forecast did? The February forecast should simply be adjustments. So yeah. That's a good point. Representative Roberts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm also late for the 10 o'clock that Representative Grunhagen went, so I just wanted to leave a couple points, even though, because I won't be here for the rest of the discussion. First of all, I support Representative Runbeck's idea of a more standardized process. And with that, regarding all the number of bills, I have a friend who's worked at the North Dakota legislature for a long time, and their approach is quite interesting. They do limit the number of bills people can introduce, and I don't necessarily support that, but one of the other things they do is they require that they're limited to 5 bills, but the bills are required to be voted on in committee and voted on the floor, even if it fails in committee. And so that will make members, some sort of stricture like that would make members be more careful about what they introduce if they know they have to shepherd it all the way to a floor vote. So I'm not necessarily advocating for that, but I think looking at other ways to put guardrails around what will happen to a bill when it gets introduced will help members think more carefully about the workload they are taking on and what they want to commit their time to. And to Representative Cleaborn's point about reviewing tax expenditures, I think that's a good idea. I also feel like it's a very good idea to sort of consider sort of a reauthorization process. When I worked in Congress many years ago, but I know it still goes on today, all of the major bills, most of them go through a five-year reauthorization. So things are not on automatic pilot with a baseline budget. Every 5 years, you go back and you look at the bulk of the ag or the Department of Transportation or whatever, and they have to justify whether the program was effective, whether that program needs to be continued, whether you know, something's changed in the economy. And I think some sort of getting ourselves on a five-year reauthorization cycle where each, it couldn't be done every year, but one or two bills every year gets on a reauthorization cycle, I think would really help manage expenditures. As we've seen in DHS, some of these things just get overlooked or get on autopilot and no one's really checking if the expenditures are happening correctly or on time. Or so I think some sort of oversight that we take ownership of a reauthorization would be, I think, helpful. So excuse me. Thank you.
Representative Robbins, you also, in your statements, brought up what we had discussed earlier about bringing more members' bills to the floor individually instead of wrapping them always up in an omnibus bill. And there was a time where many, many more individual bills were brought to the floor instead of just large omnibus bills. So we'll take both of your all of your suggestions, and I would hope that if Representative Hortman answers our invitation, that she can respond to that too, that more individual bills should be brought to the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I complete agreement with that. As are my constituents, that's one of the big frustrations I have when I'm out in the community is people feel like these omnibus bills are a dereliction of duty and they can't track what's going on. I have to say, as a new member, I had a hard time tracking what was going on. So I think it would be very helpful for the public and for the process. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Who is next on my list? I've run out of names on this topic. Should we move to the next one? Number three, conference committee, it says week, we might want to make it plural weeks, and other methods by which to promote the orderly work of conference committees. So I'll open it up for discussion on conference committees and structure of conference committees.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One thing that, and I don't know if we can handle this ourselves, but that really irked me during the conference committee process is that when the lesser body had the gavel, they frequently didn't hold meetings at all. You know, a lot of time was wasted. But is there anything that could be done that in the conference committee rules that says when you have the gavel, you have to hold a meeting?
Representative, there was a time where we simply did. Where that did not occur. And one of the problems that we had during the massive budget cuts of the recession was just that conference committees, whether it was the House or the Senate, they simply didn't have hearings and the decisions were made somewhere else. And then if you had a conference committee, the decision was made for you and that was it. So I fully agree that the conference committees should, if you have the gavel, you hold a hearing. And if you don't have anything to do, then at least have a hearing and say you have nothing to do so that the gavel can pass to the next. But I agree with you. And I'm not sure what it would take, but both bodies would have to have some sort of an agreement that the conference committees are going to proceed. Representative Cleaborn.
As a member of the Higher Ed Conference Committee this year, I thought about it through the lens of my own profession, which is as a mediator. And I thought to myself, what a different conversation we would have had all of the decisions been made in public. And I realize that there needs to be a space for the chairs to talk privately. And I would say those negotiations should be had in public during a public session. And if the chairs feel that they need to have a conversation that's private, they call a caucus. Everybody stays in the room. And they go to a separate room, but everybody knows they're having a private conversation. And I think it would shorten the period of time it takes for that ultimate bill to be worked out. I think members of the public would have a better idea of what's actually happening during those meetings. And they would know exactly which pieces the parties maybe didn't agree on. They might not know what all of the private conversation was, but they would have an idea that it's line item 13 that is being discussed. There does need to be a space for that private conversation. Everybody needs that in order to get to a real understanding of what's going on within the budget itself. But I think it would be a more transparent process if everybody knew line 13 was being discussed as opposed to something magical happened with this whole bill behind a closed door.
So. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In putting this on the agenda, just curious of what your thoughts are. In the conference committees that I've been on, they haven't been perfect, but they worked decent, and we came out with a good outcome and a good solution for the House. So I'm just curious as to what, in your expertise and years here, what is working and what's not working, what needs to be reformed in your opinion, and maybe you could throw out some suggestions for us.
Well, once upon a time, we had almost a set period of time for conference committees. It wasn't a week, it was usually weeks. I'm not saying three, but a couple of weeks at least. And the conference committees would meet, and if a conference committee met, there was a proposal that was being made by one body or the other. It was made in public so that people would understand what the proposal was. There'd be a discussion of it. Often there would be perhaps a counter proposal by the other body. But the conference committees were sort of a ping pong back and forth of proposals until you got to where you needed to be to resolve the differences in the two bills. Remember, a conference committee report is blank. You're building it, so there's nothing in it. So you build it slowly by making proposals that if it's five and five, three and three on each side agree to, and you build it. And that's almost disappeared from the legislature. Those types of conference committees are very rare, if they exist at all, and you just don't have that type of proposal. The sad part is it doesn't train members either. New members have no experience in putting together a report, and if it's a fiscal committee, it's even more serious that they don't have the experience of understanding how you would build that report. So we would have conference committees that might last several weeks, and you'd be going back and forth. There would be private discussions. Obviously, there have to be private discussions. But a lot of the discussion is in public, and the proposals would be made in public. And quite often, if you missed your deadline, you would hear it from leadership. I know of one speaker who threatened to put all of the House conferees off the committee if they didn't settle the bill by a certain date. And I was on the conference committee, but I wasn't chairing, and I remembered that the chair of our side said, please do. And she backed off. So it was a different way to do conference committees. But I would say the big divide happened during the recession. And when we got to the really hard numbers of cuts, and there was no way around it given what we were dealing with, nobody really wanted to know what the final consequences were. And that's when we should have dug in deep and understood what those consequences were.
Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald.
Just to follow up, just for the record, for me, after just, I'm a new member, of course, of 10 years, but the conference committee, the two small conference committees that I've been on, HHS and taxes in the years past, seemed to be there, in my opinion, was out and open. Everything was transparent. Certainly was nothing in the smoky-filled rooms, dark at night, at least on the tax committee and the conference committee, the HHS, and that's on both parties that I've been able to be a part of. So I hadn't witnessed any of the behind-the-room, closed doors, not public access or comments. Maybe that's happening, but certainly wasn't on those committees, so I just wanted to defend those two conference committees that have been on, and I'm certainly not naive. I'm 53, so I've been around the block, but seem to be up and fair and honest and transparent and have the public full input. So maybe there's something I'm missing there, Mr. Chairman.
No, well, Representative McDonald, I can also go back and say there was a time where conference committees were done where we had a Republican and a Democratic chair. And I was part of that conference committee in higher ed where we co-chaired the conference committee on the House side with a Republican. We would also put a member of the minority on the conference committee, whether or not they voted for the bill, simply to make sure that there was representation on the bill by all sides. And I would hope that we would return to that. You might not have voted for the bill, but certainly your ideas should be part of that conference committee. So,
Mr. Chairman,
McDonald.
If you'll just indulge me, just I'll wrap it up. I think it's a very good point, Mr. Chairman. As the country continues to be polarized politically, I often will tell my constituents and family and friends or anyone that I meet that at the legislature in the 10 years I've been here, and when my father was here for 14, it was even better then, but the friendships and the trust and the respect of one another and our colleagues on the other side of the aisle is of the highest personally. Many of the bills that we pass over the House floor are nonpartisan, you know, 80%, some say 70, some say 80. We do what's best for Minnesota. So I hope that as a legislature, if anything that we can suggest out of here, the reform, is that we continue our friendship, our respect, our admiration, and trust from each party, and not further divide as it appears to be in our nation. Because if that happens here in our local governments, our local states, then our nation really is has a problem. Because at least locally, our great republic works for the most part. It's not perfect. Mm-hmm. We're not that broken. We have good friendships. I have respect for everyone here. But there's a new brood coming, and it seems to be a lot of distrust and partisan politics. We got to make sure we don't continue that. And I think that the conference committees that you mentioned will help solidify the friendship and trust.
Representative Cleaver.
Well, I just want to, on the public record, since people who may be watching today didn't attend the conference committees, we did in fact have that. This year, we had both Republicans and Democrats on the House side. And I know for the Higher Ed Conference Committee, the Republicans and the Democrats on Higher Ed worked very well together from the House side. So I just want to make sure that anybody who might be watching today understands that they were bipartisan conference committees.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the history lessons are, I think, valuable. Talking about the recession, talking about, and then there was the year before the recession. Are you talking about 11 and 12?
Yeah.
Okay, and then there was 09 and 10. My recollection is that no cuts were made in 9 and 10 when you guys, I wasn't here, when you guys knew there was a big recession coming. And that biennium ended with a $4.5 billion deficit. Right, which then came into the 11-12 biennium. So it's been rough, it's been rocky, and not maybe both ways are not ideal. There should have been cuts probably in 9 and 10. But I will say this too, that some of these new ideas perhaps need to be ensconced in our rules because we've had such changeover in personnel. You know, I mean, like 5 times in the last 8 years or whatever. So you have that added problem of people not really knowing, you know, how it's been done, what's the best procedure, and so on. So I'm hopeful that there will be these changes made.
Representative Rumbeck, when we did the last serious look at making reforms in 07 and 08, and I was chairing government operations, and we had the majority of the hearings were over the interim. The final report, if you remember, and it's also you can access it online, we had proposals of rule changes in the report that you could select from. At least you'd have a starting point. So I'm hopeful today that we can have staff draft proposals that we can take a look at, and we can then change those proposals. Some would be to rules. Some would be to joint rules. I'm not fond of putting this in law. I don't see the point in doing that. But if you want to do it that way, you could do it that way, too. But I'm hopeful that we could actually make proposals that would then go into the rules and the joint rules so that you'd see it in a concrete form.
Great.
There was someone else who was next. Who was? No one? Should we move to number four? Number four, conference committee reports and concurrences. How much time should they sit at the desk?
We don't either.
That's true. How much time they should sit at the desk before they can be taken up. So that's number four. This was one of our problems, that a conference committee report would come up and there would be almost no time to look at it, and then you'd have to vote on something with which you had really no idea what was in it.
And Mr. Chair, so I mean, there are rules, that and we just choose to bypass them, apparently, right? Isn't that
Representative
how Rumbach, this goes?
I think we can have either the chief clerk's office or the revisor's office come down and maybe do a just brief reminder of this one.
Right.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Yes, yes. My name is Pat Murphy, and I'm chief clerk of the House. Representative Chair Pawlowski and members of the committee. The question is on conference committee reports and the timing of them. I testified here 2 weeks ago, perhaps, and I talked about that currently the joint rules require conference committee reports to be posted online and available to members 12 hours before action on the report. However, the joint rule, 2.06 paragraph 10, also says that the rule does not apply after the last Thursday of a session. So in essence, starting on Friday of the last 4 days of session, the 12-hour rule is no longer in place. That was something that I addressed in my testimony, that that's probably the number one thing that I hear comment from members, as to Chair Pawlowski's point, that members don't have enough time to process, to read, to caucus, and more importantly, the public doesn't have time to really see what are in those reports, to have that rule not in place for the final 4 days of session. So that would be a decision for the Rules Committee or the body to make on whether or not they would keep that 12-hour rule not in place for the last 12 days. You could keep it in place till adjournment.
Representative Rumbach.
Yeah, it seems to be a rule that's, used, very liberally, I guess, to have the session back up till the last 2 days or whatever. So everything has to fly through. And so I think it's a tool that maybe we don't want to make available.
And it's probably a reminder for all of us that there is no one fix here. If we would have more time prior to this, and those conference committees could complete their work within a week to 10 days before the end of session, we wouldn't need to be in this fix. So there are several steps here in making sure that we would have something before us that would be understandable, or that we would have time to at least read through and understand. And also to the point of, even in a conference committee report, there can be errors. So if there is an error in a conference committee report, and sometimes those errors can be significant, that we would have time to turn it around and fix it. And we have had significant errors in the last few sessions there where there have been conference committee reports that have been flawed. So,
I mean, Mr. Chair, I mean, you would also raise the issue that a lot of things would demand, rediscussion, right? I mean, whether the committees could handle that or not, or what you'd do about that. But
Representative Rumbach, I'm going to repeat myself. There's no one fix here. It's going to take a series of things for us to be able to get our work done on time and in a fashion that is what's best for the people of Minnesota. We have been negligent the last few sessions, and it shows. I've been at meetings in my district just within the last week where we're still trying to get a handle on what happened during the special session, and that things were put in that bill with no public testimony. And now we've got one of them was my local units of government and a provision that was in the tax portion. So, again, we should have time to understand what is going on here.
I just recall before any of you, except the couple of you, were here back in I think 98 or so in that budget, or 99, there was a provision that said that snowmobiles could no longer have treads in Minnesota. And do you remember that? It passed. I mean, it was part of a great big omnibus bill.
And I mean, that to me, that was one of the biggest things in the session and the aftermath of the session, because you heard from snowmobilers all over the state who were furious. So, you know, you have that kind of mistake or that kind of provision that's going to get really challenged immediately, as opposed to over the whole summer.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chief Doug Murphy. So have we come to a conclusion that we want to tighten things? Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm just in conclusion, perhaps, that the 12 hours remains throughout the entire session. I mean, it's what it sounds like people are saying, I guess, that we would at least have that.
Representative Poppy, some of us might argue for even more.
And that I would not disagree. I think that we could do something great, but I'm just trying to figure out what conclusion we're coming to at each of these junctures.
I think we're coming to a conclusion that we need more time. And remember, the joint rules are a little bit different.
Yes.
So we will have to have the help of the other body. But there has to be, I would think the other body would also come to some of the conclusions that we have come to. Mm-hmm. It's time to make some changes. Representative Cleburne.
Mr. Chair, as a new member and not having all the history that you have, what I heard today was that we have more bills than ever before. We're trying to decide which forecast is appropriate, which forecast is more helpful to us. We are looking to see if we are a collective or a competitive group. I don't even know if the deadline that we have for the conclusion of the legislature is even the right date anymore for the amount of work that we're doing. And so the question I would have is, when we think about the rules that would say, when do we end our work? Is that an appropriate date anymore? Should it be later in the year based on revenue projections when they come out, when we could get actual numbers, based on the number of bills that we have to do the work appropriately? Do we say that we end our session bills and have to have a final bill a week in advance of closure?
Representative Cleburne, I think I'm going to have Mr. McCormick come down and remind us of our constitutional responsibilities, because I think you're now talking about one other change we could make, and that's in the mm-hmm. Constitution.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Pat McCormick. I'm Director of Policy Research. The Constitution, was amended in what's known as the Flexible Sessions Amendment to the Constitution to create what is a 30-month process, which means that we are establishing the next 24-month budget in the 6 months prior to its implementation. And the Flexible Sessions Amendment also created constitutional adjournment, which means that we adjourn after the third week of May constitutionally each year of the two-year biennium. And finally, the Constitution, as most constitutions do, require that we don't have that we have a balanced budget. Ours requires we can't fund the budget through debt. So that's the actual terminology. That creates a sort of a pattern to each 30-month session. There have been many debates and proposals over the years of people who say we should shift. There are states like Wisconsin is an obvious example where there is no constitutional adjournment, and in which they set the budget throughout the summer months, and they meet a lot more than we do. They're much closer to a full-time legislature as opposed to what we are, which is I always thought we were kind of on the edge between part-time and full-time legislature. And those kind of constitutional amendments can be proposed. They can be considered. It's important to understand you're rejiggering the entire 30-month process, and we have to rewrite a broad swath of statutes to follow on with our new constitutional regime. And that would include changing the forecast, changing a lot of the material facts about how the governor creates and builds the governor's budget, and how we consider the budget.
Mr. McCormick, so that would take a constitutional amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
So we now have another tool we could use. But the constitutional amendment, as you know, would take several steps. So any questions for Mr. McCormick? Representative Claver, you have a question? You want?
No, thank you. That was okay.
Further discussion on number four. So I'll move to number five, deadlines, looking at Joint Rule 2.03, and that's in the green joint rules on page six. So 2.03 are creating additional deadlines in the House rules. And the second half of this after the slash, the House can establish, of course, its own deadlines. Mm-hmm. And that might be a consideration, that we would establish deadlines regardless of what the joint rules were, and ours might be much tighter than the joint rules. So that would be an option. So discussion on that. Representative Poppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, you know, the issue of deadlines, leadership has to meet them. And when they don't, there's, you know, what is the consequence? And what say do we have to make that change happen? So I guess my question is just, I think some of these we could change, and we could say it's going to be this or that, but if it actually is maybe not totally enforceable, or there's no consequence to it, or there's no ability to influence that decision, I guess the questions that I would raise.
Representative Poppe, for those of us who have met deadlines as chairs and then have had leadership come down and tell us that we have to have another hearing, and we've had another hearing, and the consequences of that hearing did not come out the way leadership felt, it's a double-edged sword for them. So I fully agree with you. I think the deadline should be held very tightly, and I think they should be moved forward. Now, remember, we've got a series of deadlines. We've got policy committee deadlines. We have fiscal committee deadlines. I would even say, and I know that there will be people at the table that don't like it, I think there should be a deadline on introduction of bills, that after a certain point, no more bills are introduced, and we deal with the bills that we have before us. But I think those deadlines would be most helpful. And that leadership, too, has to learn that deadlines work both on the members and on leadership when they're set.
Mr. Chairman, I completely agree with you on that, and I wouldn't be opposed to the deadline on bill introductions as well. But I think coming out of this committee, it should be we should be all, and I think we will be, resolute that deadlines must be met, must be taken seriously, and with little leniency. Personally, we all need deadlines, right? Our own personal, from family or business. A deadline is a good thing to have, and it forces us to accomplish the job, and if we take it seriously. I think once the legislature stops taking the deadline seriously, say, well, just one more, I'll just allow a little, another day, another 24 hours, that makes us a loose and irresponsible legislature. So out of this committee, we're resolute. Deadlines is a deadline. You miss it, the plane's taken off. The train's left the station. And as far as additional deadlines, I'm not sure of that needed, but I'm open to hearing your opinion.
Well, I think I've expressed it. I'm all for deadlines and holding to them. I think it is what we should be responsible to do for the people of Minnesota. They expect that from us, and we should do it. Representative Claiborne.
I hate to be the naysayer in the room. I'm all about deadlines. I think people work in the amount of space that they have to work. But I do think that we have to have some sort of exception to the rule for emergencies. Disaster strikes. We saw it this year with our farming economy. And if something catastrophic were to occur, we would have to have space within that deadline process to be able to hear an exceptional bill. And then the question is, what guidelines and guardrails would we put around that exception? But there has to be, you know, it's great. As you said earlier, there's the double-edged sword. We want to make sure that we have that space to meet the real needs of our state if something were to happen.
Representative Cleburne, I don't think here is saying that if there is an emergency that would occur, and certainly we have had natural emergencies and we have had other types of emergencies that come up, and we have to expedite whatever the resolution is for that emergency. But that's not the excuse for what has happened over recent sessions here. So, Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just reflecting on the last couple comments, and then connecting with a comment made by Representative McDonald before about how partisan and polarized, unfortunately, our country and society become. Because it occurs to me that you know, there's one deadline that we have that has been consistently violated, and it's also a deadline that one would think would be sort of the hardest to violate, which is the constitutional deadline of adjournment. You know, as you've pointed out so many times, Mr. Chair, the special sessions are not so special anymore. And so I guess I do keep reflecting on, because I've been interested in this point about enforcement too, that, you know, we impose deadlines, then emergencies happen, things get pushed around, and again, there's that constitutional deadline that of all the deadlines is one that sort of really has been consistently getting violated. And I think we just need to recognize that so much of this is happening in this broader societal context of having a very hard time finding common ground. And I think so. It does seem to me that the leadership in both chambers then end up, just in the few years that I've been here, it seems to be so difficult for there to be agreement that gets reached, and it just gets pushed, you know, later and later. And it used to be right; it sort of would go up to the last day, and then the last hour, and then the last few minutes, and then and just pushing right into these non-special sessions. So I'm not quite sure what that does with what we're doing. I think we need to keep on pushing hard, but just to recognize that there's kind of a broader societal political context within which this is happening, that I think is making it very, very difficult. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. You know, this year, the deadlines were generally pushed forward, in my understanding, by about a week or so in order to allow more time at the end of the session for conference committee work, except that we met, at least in the House, those deadlines, and when it came time to start holding the conference committees, the other body wasn't ready, and we didn't take advantage of that extra time we gave ourselves to work in conference committee. It was almost to me, it appeared in the conference committee that I was shadowing, that productive work was done while the conference committee meetings were being held, but that there were some parties to the discussion who really kind of wanted things to disappear behind closed doors, and that really bothered me.
I think it bothers all of us. Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a note, I have an event in my district that I need to get to, and so we'll need to step out. But I thank you very much and want to continue. Thank you, sir.
And before you leave, if it's all right with the committee, I will have staff draft some of these in both joint rule and rule formats. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if you want a constitutional amendment drafted, but if we do, we could have that too, so that at the next meeting we would have something concrete to take a look at. And then you can adjust those whichever way you want to adjust them. So if the committee agrees, I'll authorize staff to do
that. And Mr. Chair, I've been very quiet because I feel like I think I will find that very useful and very helpful to be able to sort of react to some specific ideas. And so I thank you so much, Mr. Chair, for having staff draft that. I think that'll be really helpful. And this is a helpful conversation as well. And then to bring it down to specific proposals will be really helpful too. Thank you.
If it's if the committee approves, I think I will send the drafts to all of the members of the House so that they can all take a look at them and then respond back to. So, do we wish to move on to number six? Discouraging policy provisions in budget bills.
Yes.
Representative McDonald.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I think that's a good idea.
Any other discussion? Yep.
Mr. Chair, an earlier one of these hearings, a member of the public who testified suggested that any policy provisions tied to a budget bill should only be effective over the course of the budget and should expire when the budget expires. I thought that was a pretty good idea.
Good suggestion. Mm-hmm. Further comments on this?
Mr. Chair, I wondered if Representative Elkins could just repeat that. We were chatting, so it sounded like it was a good idea.
Representative Elkins.
Yeah, it was a member of the public. I can't remember exactly who it was who suggested that one solution would be that anything that's attached to a budget bill would only be effective over the course of the budget and would expire basically at the end of that budget biennium.
Representative Cleburne, you're ready to say something.
Well, you know, there are many ways to look at this, right? You could say the reason it's a problem is because the governor has no line item veto over policy, if my understanding is correct. They can only line item veto an appropriation. So if we are going to have a budget bill, it should be a budget bill. I agree with Representative McDonald. I would like to see policy out of budget bills. So that's two ways we could do it. Either allow the governor a line item veto of policy, which I would not really be excited about, but or keep them clean, keep the bills clean.
Further discussion on this one. There seems to be some unifying comments on this. So let's move to base budgeting. And if you remember the presentation here, the K-12 committee in particular, or K-12 finance, was a base budget approach. There was some discussion, even today, that we should have more discussion of base budgets across all the accounts so that all the members would understand that we have made commitments in previous sessions, and those commitments, if you want to go back into those bases, you are going to have some serious consequences. So there's a big difference between what a base budget is and then what you might have in a fiscal forecast. The base budgets usually move forward. The fiscal forecast can be positive or negative. Mm-hmm. So, and I think from what I've heard from members that there should be, and Representative Rumbach has brought it up, more instruction to chairs at the beginning of session that they should be dealing with perhaps what is the base budget of whatever their area of expertise is. And what are the limits within that base budget?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rumbach.
So in a way, 7 and 8 seem like they might go together. because in a base budget, I'm just thinking of there have been several agencies, DHS, for example. Let's talk about it. I mean, in what situation might there want to be triggered a zero-based budget situation? So maybe you do, if you get the base budget right and you understand that and what's going on in a committee like that, you might actually go, well, we think there appears to be some issues. Maybe we go to a zero base budget situation and, you know, much more prolonged discussion about the internal affairs and the management and so on and so forth ensues. But, I think for the legislature not to be able to react and to say, you know, there needs to be more work done here, we have more questions, it seems like there ought to be a way.
Representative Rumbach, I agree. I think our problem has been a misunderstanding of what these budgets are and the consequences of what happens to them. I'm going to go back to the recession. When we were making these cuts, there was almost no understanding of the depth and impact of what these cuts were going to do. If you didn't understand the budget, you certainly didn't understand the cuts that you were making to that budget. So we had no flexibility other than to make cuts, which was the way it was going to be. Well, then understand what you're going to do with those cuts. What's the impact? I'll just go back to higher ed. When you're looking at double-digit increases in tuition, not just one year but over a series of years, when you're looking at record debt, you've got much more to do than just sit there and say, well, I'll just vote yes. Mm-hmm. So I think an understanding of the budgets is the most crucial part of this. Here's what we have committed the state to. Forget about the fiscal forecast for a while, and this is what our budgets are. Now, if you want to make changes in them, you certainly can, but again, there are consequences to those changes, significant. And in Health and Human Services, I agree. There should be a total understanding of that budget before you even act on any fiscal mm-hmm. forecast. Mm-hmm. But that takes time, a lot of time in committee. Yeah. And that means you're not hearing bills, you're hearing budgets. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Representative Poppy, did you have your hand up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we are a part-time slash you know, not yet full-time legislature. And I do think that I think we should, as personally, we each should have a commitment that we're going to understand the areas that we are involved in, whatever our committees are that we serve on, and to understand that. It's the chair's responsibility to help educate us and formulate the agendas and the meetings to be able to help with that for the individual legislators as well as the public. But I think, you know, when we're looking at a zero-based budgeting approach, we would need to be here on a full-time basis in order to actually fulfill the obligations to be able to do that successfully. And I believe we're limited in that right now. We, you know, the base budgeting makes sense, that we know that we've put forward a budget. This kind of goes to Representative Robbins when she talked about reauthorization. We then would be doing it every 2 years, because we would be looking at what that base budget is, and if we continue to say that what's important in that base budget should continue, we have reauthorized the fact that that money is being spent in that way. So I guess I would be in opposition to us looking at a zero-based budgeting, but I don't think that that means that we're not identifying where there are issues and where we may have to change some things and realign some things. But understanding a base budget is becoming clearer and clearer to me that that's where we should be going.
Representative Cleburne, did you have a...
Well, I was... thank you, Mr. Chair. I would say zero-based budgeting could be catastrophic to our state if the people do not understand what they're cutting. Anybody can see that two is larger than one, but if you don't understand the ripple effect of that spreadsheet, we could absolutely create great harm to citizens all across our state, and that would not be anything I would want to be part of. And to the point that Representative Poppy just raised, it would require more than a part-time legislature to do that. And so unless we are going to do the constitutional amendment and have us be full-time, I can't get my head around how we could responsibly do zero-based budgeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I still have a concern that we're about this fact that right now we project inflation in revenues and don't project it in costs. So I think it would be silly to apply an across-the-board CPI type of adjustment to the whole budget on the cost side. We know that the cost of debt, which is already committed, is not going to change. But it's also reasonable to expect that in the K-12 education budget, or just the education budget in general, we know that the vast majority of that budget is people. It's teachers and support staff. Mm-hmm. And it's unrealistic to expect that the wages paid to teachers are not going to increase in the market at the same rate as other educated people in the private sector. And I think it's silly to ignore that fact. And we also know that the number of teachers is going to be closely correlated to the number of students, which is, you know, very easily or well predicted by our demographers. And the combination of you know, what are wage rates doing for educated people in the private sector, and what the demographers tell us about you know, the growth or the shrinkage in student populations, are both easily forecasted and would provide the basis for a sound projection of inflation in at least that part of the budget. And I don't understand why we don't do that.
Representative McDowell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you think a reform that this committee could suggest in regards to the budget, base budgeting, and even zero-based budgeting, is directly tied to the number of bills that we have? There's over 2,000 bills. That each committee work would concentrate on the programs that each department is doing. In other words, what their appropriations are. You know, in each committee, we bring up for our bills. It's all about new spending or new programs or existing programs and new spending. That we, in working with base budgeting and truly understand that maybe we'd be a better legislator, and if we just concentrated on current work and programs that each committee is doing. Does that make sense? Higher ed, K-12, transportation, HHS, taxes. And if we maybe took a, it's kind of like the UN-session, maybe took every other year to truly understand what each department is doing. HHS, truly they're dysfunctional. We need a lot of, you know, a lot of help needs to be done there, and understanding and transparency. But we have such a short amount of time, which I kind of think that is very important that we have a short amount of time. I like it's a part-time citizen legislature. The more time we have down here, the more mess we can make or not. But truly understood each department and what their programs are doing and how it's spending and if it's efficient. Do you think that would be a good suggestion?
Representative McDonald, there was a time when we did it. I do recall a higher ed chair that had 14 hearings on budget and did not have any bills during those hearings at all. Five hearings on the University of Minnesota's past budget, five hearings on what was then Minsky, and then two hearings each on their budget proposals. No bills. When we were done with that, then you heard whatever bills could be heard within the confines of the budget that now the committee understood and where we were going to go with our target, which was not that large considering the totality of those budgets. I think the committees appreciate having to understand the consequences of what they do. And that only happens if you understand the budgets and the numbers.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's, I hope that maybe our next meeting we can spend a little bit more time. Our time is, you know, dwindling right now. And just discussing that particular topic, we all say, boy, when I got here, the budget was $34 billion. That was 2010, 11, or 11, 12. Now it's up to $50 billion. So if we could, if I could make a suggestion before I end the mic in my conversation, that we talk more about that on the next agenda in the committee structure and base budgeting.
Representative Sandow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I when I began 6 months ago, I guess, or 8 months ago, it seemed to me that the presentations that individual agencies made were, in some instances, assumed to be funded. There was a certain amount of work that the Department of Education, the Department of Natural Resources did that was in place. But the first session that we had of this committee represented to me the work that all of us, first-year people as well as veterans, need in order to understand the consequences of the budget. I'm also interested in the way that philanthropy responds to the state budget. As a teacher and working in education for a long while, I've seen the work of philanthropic organizations, foundations, change dramatically as I guess targets have changed and the way that the state legislature has changed. And I don't think it would be a bad idea for committees, agriculture, housing, education, to consider issues of the relationship between a public budget and philanthropic budgets as well. Just a comment.
Representative Sandell, your first statement is a most interesting one on the assumption that these agencies make when they do a presentation. And I've seen their presentations and their PowerPoint fluff. They're loaded with graphics, sometimes videos. They have fonts about the size of a Volkswagen. And then they say, please give us $2.7 billion. Well, the PowerPoint fluff has got to end. And the presentations now have to be on budgets. And budgets aren't about graphics, videos, and fonts the size of a Volkswagen. And that means the chairs have to meet with the agencies in advance and say, this is what I'm going to require that you present to the committee and detail what you want to have heard in that committee. And that's about budgets. And that is a totally different presentation than the ones that most of our committees get these days.
Amen. I think I agree.
Representative Claiborne, did you have another comment?
I did. Just to the point of philanthropy, to see my previous comment about tax expenditures. If we are going to talk about the role of philanthropy, we need to know exactly if state dollars are also going to be tied to any type of philanthropic organization. We have to make sure that it's still meeting the goals of our state and how much of that philanthropic entity is being subsidized by the state through the tax expenditures. So we want to have the whole cost that the state is paying not just the budget line in isolation of the tax expenditure as well.
Representative Rundbeck.
And Representative, Mr. Chair, so when you say understand the budget, then are you assuming that we will see all the information about the federal money that is you know, merged with state money and how those programs?
Representative Rundbeck, that's correct.
Yep. Okay.
And to make sure that they're forthright in what exactly their budgets are and what they deal with. And that takes time for them to prepare. Again, we've lost, they will even admit that they don't collect some information anymore because it hasn't been requested. Well, then request it and make sure that they get the information and they present it to the committee. So, but that takes time too. And that means everybody has to work a lot more than they have worked in the first couple months of session. This isn't just about hearing bills, it's about preparation. And that takes time and effort for both the agencies and for the members of the committee.
I come here from a 25-year career in information technology, and one of the things that really struck me this year as I was reading fiscal notes in particular related to IT expenditures by departments is that there was a woeful lack of meaningful information about what was going to be done with this particular money. And this is something that I've been holding regular conversations with Michelle Weber, the new head of the Legislative Budget Office, about, you know, really improving the quality of the fiscal notes related to information technology expenditures. But one pattern that I saw this year that kind of really bothered me, and I've also raised this in the governor's blue ribbon panel on IT reform, which I've been shadowing as well, is this tendency to when the target gets cut just a little too much, is just do across the board cuts on IT expenditures. And I actually gave Chair Nelson a hard time about this one at one point, because what I'm observing is that when you do an across-the-board cut on IT expenditures, what tends to happen is that they just put off applying their needed patches and upgrades, which then create security risks in the systems that the state agencies are using. And it's really penny-wise and pound-foolish. So I'll just a commitment that I'm spending a fair amount of my time helping the new LBO director, you know, tighten up the fiscal note process for those types of things.
And your point's well taken. All of the members of the committee, and particularly the chairs, should spend more time on what's going to be presented to committee. There is nothing wrong with seeing the presentation of an agency in your office before they present it and say that's unacceptable. That is simply unacceptable, and you're going to have to change it. That's not what we want to have presented to the committee or to the House of Representatives, and you're going to have to make a different presentation and then help them frame what that presentation is going to be.
In state government finance, we typically get the spreadsheet pronounced, but very frequently we get them the morning of the hearing. It was just at 8 o'clock in the morning, so nobody's had a chance to study them.
Well, Representative Elkins, there's nothing wrong with the chair saying you should meet with all the members of the committee before you do your presentation, too. So all the members have input into this. And again, this is about preparation. Representative Claiborne.
To that point, I requested information in advance, and I always received it in advance, so I was able to be prepared. And especially in state government finance, I felt like if we are going to ask for this information to be prepared, then it truly is on us to review the materials and to make sure that when we come to committee, we're totally prepared. And in asking for more information, I want to make sure that we are also funding the preparation of that, because every minute that is spent doing all of the work to actually give us these comprehensive, it's not free. I mean, somebody has to pay for that as well. So we need to make sure if we are requesting something, we understand the work that goes into preparing that document, and then we have an obligation to actually use it. That's what I'm saying.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Out of this committee, are we able to offer reforms that help reform our agencies, just in that the dialogue that we had? That it seems to me that some agencies are shielded by whatever party's in charge, Well, they're safe, the Democrats are in charge, so they're not too accountable. Oh, they're safe, the Republicans are in charge, so they're not too accountable. And perhaps the agencies should have, and maybe they do, I don't know, a set of rules as well that they have to live by and deadlines that must not be broken. So do you think this committee could be have some help in our agencies and some of the things that you mentioned, that they need to be accountable and more? After all, it is they work for us. And I would a little bit disagree that we should fund them when we request them information. That's their job. They are accountable to the taxpayer of Minnesota, be it on whatever agency they belong to. Can we also suggest some reforms to our agencies?
Representative McDonald, I'm very familiar with the statement by one chair that said you should always grab them by the budgets and not let go. And you'd be amazed at the changes you can make.
I look forward to them, Mr. Chair. Okay. And just lastly, in Department of Revenue, the taxes, there's not a lot of fluff in taxes on the tax committee. I've been a joy to be on that committee for 6 years. It's by the numbers. So, but they do, the Department of Revenue and the commissioner, every biennium, testifies and gives us their the whole dialogue and the whole information on taxes and those who are getting subsidies or getting certain tax breaks. So we do review that every year, Representative in the Department of Revenue, of who in the state, philanthropic or otherwise, is getting the tax break and where those dollars are going or where they're not going.
I think we, Representative Pop. No, go ahead.
No.
I don't have anything else on my list, but if you have other things you wish to add, this would be the time to add them.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Representative McDonald.
For the next meeting, then another suggestion is agencies.
All right.
That's vague, I understand, but your infinite wisdom will be able to come up with some.
We'll have some suggestions for you, Representative McDonald.
Very good.
There is maybe another subject. There are, with relation to budgets, there are certain agencies that have their own revenue streams, thinking, you know, of the motor vehicle excise tax, and that comes in over the time, over the year. And so I'm just wondering to what extent some of these agencies do not have a fixed budget. It seems to me that Met Council does not have a fixed budget. They will come to the end of the year, fiscal year basically, and all of a sudden announce we are in a deficit. It's a whole different kind of an animal, and just thought that I should throw that out. Maybe there's something to think about in terms of maybe how they might report more often, that type of thing, in terms of where they're at against their budget.
No, that's a good point. Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chair, on that particular question, I know that the having been a member of the Met Council for 8 years, with respect to MBEST revenues, the council always budgets based on the receipt of 95% of what is forecasted, because the forecasted amount has rarely actually been received. So that particular thing really hasn't been much of an issue.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Elkins, I guess the practices then within that agency in terms of their revenue and what they're watching, because there have been years in which they will come to the end and go, whoops, we have an $84 million deficit. So, you know, are they not able to control the spending would be my question. And if they're watching the revenues, then, you know, you'd think that they could be closer to the situation. So.
Yeah, I would argue again from the perspective of having been on the Met Council for 8 years that most of those surprises are because of surprises that the legislature has sprung upon them.
Does anyone have anything else to add?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald.
If any reform can be done in the legislature, I am confident that you're the man that could get it done. So thank you for your leadership.
Representative McDonald, this is going to happen with the collective body of the House making some decisions and probably some difficult decisions. Mm-hmm. And And it comes usually down to when we take possession of things, that's a mistake. So the first order of business should be what's good for the people of Minnesota and not what we think we're in possession of, because we're in possession of nothing, just the good work we need to do for them. So again, I'm going to yes, Representative Rumbach.
So having said that, I hope you're not alone charging up the hill. You know, hope you've got some folks on your side that agree with you too.
Representative Rumbach, I've been doing this for about the last 10 years, and there has been some progress, but obviously not enough. Okay. So I'm hopeful that we will have others who will be with us this time.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. So with that, meeting is adjourned. Thank you, members.